Welcome to the Motherhood Unshackled podcast. My name is Klaus Carrian, mom and parenting coach. I'm here to guide you to challenge anything that takes away your freedom and makes you less than you could be. I'm here to encourage you to let your problem shift away from the safe problem and instead guide you to face your true self within. Your safe problems are things external of you that keep you distracted from what really matters. Like, my child is the problem. If they didn't have this behavior, things would be great. I wouldn't yell at them, and so on and so forth. As long as you believe that the child is the problem and that they have to be fixed, you are both going to keep suffering. I coach moms to show up mindfully always, especially when their children misbehave. Each week, I bring you a message to guide you on this journey we call parenting. My goal is to guide you to experience a deep, authentic connection with yourself and your child through the beautiful moments and the challenging ones. It's time for heartfelt, joyful, and simple parenting. Thank you for spending some time with me today. Hello and welcome to today's episode. Today we have a special guest with us, Michelle. She is joining us as an expert personal trainer and health coach. Welcome to the podcast, Michelle.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. I'm excited to have this conversation. We're going to have a conversation around weight loss and our metabolism and all those lovely things, especially for anyone over 30. And it's funny because my mother-in-law, essentially, she's been talking to me. She's, I don't know in how old, but definitely over 50. And she's like telling me how I need to pay attention to my hormones and to this and to that, because it becomes so hard to lose weight when you're older. And over, you know, during the pandemic and stuff, I put on a few pounds that I've been trying to let go of, but now I am over 30 and I find that it's much harder than it was before. So I'm very excited to have you for this conversation.
Yeah. And do you want me to speak to that a little bit, what you were just saying?
Yeah. So like, let's just start right off. Like, why weight loss? Why is it harder to do after you're 30?
Yeah. So just a disclaimer, as we start talking, there is one piece. People's hormones can change, especially the thyroid hormone is the main one, but there's other ones. So you always want to get that checked out with a doctor. And I would more recommend a functional doctor or someone. If you go to a conventional doctor and it tests out normal and you're having any symptoms, try to go to someone else that does more functional medicine and can look at those labs differently or check different ones. But even if you have a hormone problem or you don't, these lifestyle pieces of nutrition, exercise, and movement are really important. And they're especially important if you are having any hormone type problems. But as we age, we tend to do things differently and small little things that we don't even notice. So things like we might just move less. So if you think back to when you were in high school or in your 20s, you were probably just typically moving more, like moving around your house, going to the store, walking places. We also tend to exercise less. So you can think about that for yourself. Are you actually exercising less or not at all? And so when you have exercise, you have that calorie burn in the moment. But also when you're putting on muscle mass, that muscle mass is burning more calories than fat. So you sort of get that negative hit twice. You're not burning calories in the moment. Your muscle mass is decreasing, which is also going to bring that metabolism down. And then a lot of times, food-wise, we're either eating the same or even more. And especially as we get older and we have a lot going on in our lives, we tend to stress eat, emotionally eat, we have sugar cravings. So you might notice that one of these areas is maybe more you, or maybe you're a little bit in each area, and all those together are going to affect your metabolism and slow it down.
Yeah. And I think the last 2 years was the perfect storm of all those things. We moved less, we had very different lifestyles. We started sitting a whole lot more and probably started eating, stress eating a whole lot.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. So the first hormone to look at is the thyroid hormone. I have a question for you. So when you were talking about, you know, movement and muscle mass, can we just briefly talk about what muscle mass like how to increase it? Does it have to be weights, like lifting weights, or do things like, because I know you're a certified yoga instructor as well, so do things like yoga actually help to increase your muscle mass? Can you touch on that?
Yeah. So for strength training and to build muscle, we want to do strength training. So obviously you can think that can be body weight, that can be with weights, and that can be yoga depending on the class. So you know you're on the right track if you feel those muscles burning. So when you feel those muscles burning, that means those muscles are going to break down and build up. So that's sort of the key to know, because depending on your level, you could be doing squats with no weights and feeling that burn. So especially with strength training, I usually give the range of 8 to 20 reps. So once you can do really even, you could say 15 to 20. Once you get up to those higher reps, you can bump up your weights and then maybe go down to 8 reps with that higher weight. So you want to feel that muscle burn. And so the same thing with yoga. If you are doing a relaxation class or a restoration class, those aren't going to build strength. They may be good for your health, because also decreasing stress can play an important role in your metabolism. So that can be good, but it's not going to build muscle. So you want to make sure, if your goal is to do a strength training yoga workout, that you are doing one where you feel those muscles burning.
I like that, because lately I used to have a routine where I was doing a bit of strength training and a bit of yoga and a bit of cardio, but my body's just asking to do like the more intense yogas. But I'm like, is it actually moving the needle, or am I just like, you know? But so that's interesting. That's good to know. And I think the key piece here is, like, if you are doing 15, 20 reps and you don't feel the burn, then add weights or do something.
Yes.
Something else there. I like that tip a lot. So what changes in our metabolism as we age that makes our metabolism go slower?
Yeah. So I think it's those things of, sometimes it's not necessarily our metabolism changing, even though we seem to think that it's, we have changed. And when you are moving, exercising, eating differently, stressing more. So if you are overcome with stress, some people will either notice that increases or decreases their metabolism. It will just depend on your body. So, and it's also that muscle mass is a big key in our metabolism. So, I mean, if you picture somebody who's really old in their 80s or 90s, you're going to picture someone who probably doesn't have a lot of muscle mass. And if you're picturing an elderly person aging, you notice that they start to really lose that muscle mass. So that would sort of be that extreme example. So, you know, especially when you're in your 30s, you really want to work on building strength training into your routine as you age. And you can keep doing it into your 80s. You know, as a physical therapist, we have elderly that come into a clinic and we are working on strength training and building their muscle. And I like to tell people to strength train at least 3 times a week, because we lose muscle mass so quickly. So within 48 hours, you can start to lose that strength. And you have probably felt it. If you haven't exercised in a while, or even if you take a week off, you're going to probably be a little extra sore versus if you're more consistent with it. So 3 days a week for strength training is really key to build that strength and keep that strength.
I like that. Build and keep. Okay, a few things came up in my mind when you were sharing there. Two things. The first one, let's just keep where you were going. The muscle mass, we lose it quickly. So it's funny, because I have this yoga app and I've been following it, and there's like a range of different yoga classes, and it's from like relaxations all the way to cardio and strength and things like that, which is really interesting. But they have this thing on there, it's like a 7-day to beach body. So I'd like to maybe talk on that. I'll just give you a little bit of background so we can dive deeper into this conversation. When I saw that this week, I was like, okay, maybe if I do this 10 times, like if I do this 7 days, 10 times, I'll get where I want to go. But I know that in 7 days, I'm not going to get to this perfect beach body, right? So I think there's this big thing that, like how long it should take for us to be able to achieve our goals. Again, I think that answer is different for everybody. But when I realized that, I was like, okay, I really need to put my health back and my physical well-being back into my priorities. This was back in January a little bit, and then really so like a big focus in May. And then it was like July, and I was still not seeing any weight drop in the scale. And I have a scale that also measures your body fat percentage and your muscle mass. And nothing was moving. I was like, what is going on? Like, I'm exercising every day. I was doing strength training and whatnot. So I'm wondering if you can talk about kind of like a realistic timeline. And I get that might be different for everybody, but also like you said that muscle mass leaves quickly. So like, how much do you have to do to actually increase your muscle mass?
Yeah. So there is no 7-day beach body. If there was, we probably wouldn't be talking. But
right.
So yeah, it definitely takes time. And so there is that one piece when you're talking about your body, and you sort of touched on a little bit. So there is that strength piece, which is your muscle, but there's also that fat loss piece. And so sometimes with weight loss, there's a difference between fat loss and water loss. So sustainable health, I mean, you want that fat loss. You don't want water loss that you can sometimes get. So it's going to take time. And the other key piece with strength training is when you put on more muscle, that muscle is going to burn more calories than fat. It's also going to shape your body. So if you have a pound of fat and a pound of muscle, that pound of muscle is going to be smaller. So that's where sometimes people can lose weight and that's where people, the number on the scale might stay the same, but they might be just a little bit smaller. So with muscle, you can sort of tone better. So when you are talking about losing weight, nutrition is also really key. So you can be doing strength training or other things, but if you're not bringing that nutrition piece in, it can not lead you to getting the results you want. The other thing is for people who do cardio, sometimes cardio can actually lower your metabolism. So it's going to be different for everybody, especially if you are someone who hasn't exercised and you start doing cardio like 30 minutes, that can actually stress your metabolism because the traditional approach of exercise more and eat less is going to lower your metabolism and increase your hunger and cravings. Because when you do cardio, you burn so many calories at once that your body's like, hey, I need to preserve myself. I need to get those calories in. And it sends off a cascade of hormones that increase your hunger and cravings. So typically with strength training, if you aren't overdoing it, you're not going to see that. You're going to burn less calories in the moment. But like we were talking with muscle mass, the strength training is going to burn a little more calories after because it's going to be rebuilding and repairing those muscle loss. And timeline wise, like you were saying, it really just depends on the person and also their genetics. Some people are a little more, they can put on muscle easier. We all have these different body shapes. So it's really going to depend what you're doing for your strength training and sort of how hard you're pushing it. So if you're doing strength training and you don't feel like you're seeing results, think about, are you actually getting stronger? So let's say you were able to do 5 pushups and now you can do 10. So that tells me you're building muscle, even if you can't see those changes or see a difference on the scale. So look at those other measures. And also you might need to push yourself a little harder. Now, so when I start with someone who's a beginner or has an injury, we start slow. Like they might do 5 to 10 minutes of exercise. We're going to make sure you're doing exercise quickly. But if you have all those basics down correctly, you know how to do correct form, you might need to push yourself a little more. So that might be bumping up those weights, doing heavier weights, finding different ways to challenge your body and making sure that you are hitting all the muscles. So you can't spot train. Like you can't just spot train your abs and lose fat there. Your body is going to lose fat throughout the body. And some people are going to lose more fat in other areas than others, just based on their genetics. But our legs are big muscles. So focusing on your leg muscles can also help to sort of increase that calorie burn and that metabolism a little bit. So just because those bigger muscles are going to be able to get bigger than a smaller muscle like our bicep muscle.
I like that. Let's go a little bit deeper into the other measures because, like I mentioned, on my recent journey, I was kind of discouraged because I wasn't seeing anything shift on the scale. And you're right, that's when I really said, okay, well, I've been working out, but I haven't really paid attention to my nutrition. So I started paying attention to what I was eating and, the different parts of that. And there's a whole bunch of different meal plans that you can have. So we don't necessarily need to go super deep into that. But then what I also started doing is I stopped weighing myself every day. And I started to take a picture of myself, front, side, and back view. And then I said, I'm going to just keep doing what I'm doing and take another one in a month. And a month later, I think maybe like may had dropped like 1 pound, but like the picture was very different. So what would be other measures that people can look at instead of like staying focused on the weight? Because I do feel like that's one that, it's not super accurate, maybe realistic.
Yeah, I love that. I had to get rid of my scale probably 15 years ago because it can get very it can I mean it's just a number and we get so obsessed with it, or you want to reach this goal. So if you are someone who weighs yourself and you are sort of feeling that pressure, or you weigh yourself and you feel bad, or you weigh yourself and you think, I need to do this or I need to do that, I would encourage you to stop weighing yourself. Maybe limit it to once a month or once every 2 months. Because feeling that shame and guilt and all those feelings is not going to help you move forward in your health. So, like you were saying, using these other measures. So, a picture can be great. Just like you were saying, you can do measurements. So, where you are measuring your waist with a tape measure, your hips, arms, legs. So, that will tell you too. And using, like I said, the strength. So maybe doing squats or push-ups, or any type of exercise. Maybe if you do yoga, you're holding a crescent lunge. How long can you hold it for? And use that, because that's really telling you if you're getting stronger. And I know as I have exercised and then strength training got stronger, strength just makes you feel good when you can do things, when you can lift up your kids. Or you can walk up a flight of stairs without being out of breath. I remember after I had my third kid, going up the stairs and being out of breath. And like, I have to change something. It doesn't have to be complicated because I only need to go, 20 seconds up the stairs. But having those other markers, especially if you are struggling with something else physically, like going up the stairs or something like that, like, hey, let's note how this is and note how it is in a month. And you could do week to week, but I think that month to month, you're going to see that progress a little more.
I agree with that because I think week to week is a bit much. As long as you're staying consistent, then keep doing that. With all the three things that you mentioned, the movements, so the exercise, the lifestyle, and the nutrition. And then, yeah, that's really fun. Like at the first of every month, just record how many push-ups you could do this month versus last month, or like squats or lunges or things like that. I really like that way of measuring things. That's really awesome. And yeah, the other reason, I don't know if you know too much about that, but you mentioned something earlier about cardio and lowering your metabolism. Something I dove into at the beginning of this year. Wow, I can't believe it's November. Can't believe it's the end of the year. But at the beginning of 2022, I started looking into our hormone cycle, like our 28-day menstrual cycle. And there's a whole bunch of studies around that like there's certain times of the month where cardio is our friend and certain times of the month where cardio is not our friend. So it's, I think, just like knowledge is power, and the more that you can understand, like, this is an amazing place to start. And then you can even go deeper in whatever areas you're interested in. But learning about our 28-day cycle is super powerful in helping us. If I'm going to take 30 minutes every day or an hour every day to work out, I want it to be doing, like, moving the needle and in my favor. I don't want to be doing cardio when it's just going to do, when I should be doing strength training or vice versa. Are you familiar with like the 28-day cycle and things like that?
So I mean, it's definitely not my specialty, and I know some other health coaches specialize in that if someone is like looking to dive deeper into that. But I think it also goes back to that sense of listening to your body, and we sort of get lost in that. So, if we're following a certain program or doing something, we think we have to do it all month. And so I will, they usually say mid-cycle, you have more energy and you can do you can push yourself a little bit harder. You know, at the end of the cycle, when your cycle starts, like you might need to slow down and take some days off. So I personally just sort of listen to my body, and I sort of know when it's like, when I'm about to get my period, I might do more walking, or sometimes I get low back pain. So it doesn't feel good for a day or two to walk. So I won't, but that is the time I go in to do more yoga and more deep breathing. So really just tuning into your body and noticing what it needs. Do you need to push harder? Do you need to rest? Do you need to just take some deep breaths because you're overwhelmed?
Yeah. And I like that. Even if you don't know all the information, just listen to your body. For example, today I had planned a workout, but I'm like, my energy is not there as I'm approaching, you know, the end of my cycle. So I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to do some very restorative yoga here, do some twists to detox and things like that. But I'm also in the middle of a 7-day just yoga challenge, right? So I could easily be like, oh, I'm a failure because I won't do the 7 days in 7 days. I don't know if you want to touch on maybe that kind of mindset. I've very much gone over that. It's like, you know what, if it takes me 14 days to do a 7-day challenge, so be it. I'm a success because I finished it. Do you have like, you know, if someone's like, I need to work out 5 days a week and they miss 1 day, 1 week, what's the better approach to take instead of being like, I give up, I can't do 5 days and I won't even do anything next week? So what's like the better approach to do that?
Yeah. So it's sort of that like all or nothing mindset. So I'm either like all in, I'm going to do this challenge, or I miss a day and I'm out. And, you know, in the busyness of life, it's just really not going to help you stay successful. So I'm all about sustainable change. So if you're doing a challenge and you need to take that day off, then take it off or whatever you're doing, because that consistency pays off. So if the rest of the weeks you are consistent, you are going to be successful. So I'll use a recent example from my life. So I am 40 years old, and at 40, I learned how to do a pull-up in a month. So I was super excited. So now I'm just trying to keep that pull-up, like I was saying. So I try at least 3 times a week to do it so I can maintain that and not lose that muscle mass. But we are getting ready to move, and my husband and I went out to Arizona to look at houses, and I didn't work out at all. And we didn't even like, normally I'll just like walk, and we didn't even do much walking. And we got back, had to put our house up. So I took a whole week off, but I am sort of right back to it. So normally I wouldn't recommend taking a week off, or if I go on vacation, I still try to do a little bit. But I have been so consistent over the past years that that doesn't affect me. I don't feel bad. I don't feel shame. I didn't probably eat quite as good as I normally would, but that's okay. I got right back to it when I could.
Yeah, because you're not starting at zero anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're not starting at, you're starting where you're already ahead. And like you say, consistency does matter significantly. How long would you tell someone, like someone who's starting to work with you, for example, or just starting on their health journey, like how long would you say, like, give it? Do you have kind of a time frame that you give them, or is it very much different for everybody? But would you say, like, you know, just stick to it for 3 months, develop that consistency for 3 months? I guess it comes down to, like, some people say it takes 21 days to build a habit. Like, how long would you say, like, stick with this before like exploring any other changes or variations or whatever?
Yeah, I think it also depends, one, where you're starting from, and two, how much you're willing to put into it. So someone who, and it's always important to be honest with yourself. So if you're honest with yourself and you're like, I can only put 5 to 10 minutes of exercise in, you know, 5 days a week, you're going to have a little bit different starting point than someone who can put 30 minutes in. But the point is to be honest with yourself what you can be consistent about, because if it's 5 minutes, start with that 5 minutes, because you will get somewhere. You won't see it as fast, but you will still get somewhere. So it's all about creating that habit and that consistency. And so typically with habits, to really develop a new habit, especially when it has to do something with thinking or a brain or thoughts, it's typically more like 63 days of being consistent. So we all have done like something for 21 days or a month, and then we don't continue it. So it hasn't really become a habit. So when you are starting, you know, start small and stick with something you can stay consistent with, because it will eventually pay off. So, I mean, I do think a good timeline to start to see some changes. I mean, some people will see changes in a month, depending where they're starting. If someone is eating a lot of processed food, not really taking care of themselves, and they start to eat healthy and exercise, they might like lose 8 pounds. You know, they might see some results quicker versus somebody who is like, yeah, I'm eating like fairly healthy. I'm walking, you know, it depends what they add on, what they're going to see. But I think 3 months is a good point to sort of look at and see the changes that you're getting, see what you're consistent with, see what you need to change. And you should definitely see, if you're doing strength training, exercising, you should see some changes in your body and in your strength.
Yeah, for me, it was definitely 3 months where I was like, okay. Before that, it was questionable, but I wasn't using other measures to measure it as well. I was just using the scale, which was heavily discouraging for me. But it was the 3 month point where I started to see things. And I like that you said it was 63 days. And I don't know if you read the book Atomic Habits.
Yeah.
It's such a great read. And one thing that I got from there and that I keep reminding myself is like, never miss 2 days in a row. So, you know, I try to exercise actually probably 6 days a week. Most of the time, sometimes it ends up being five, but I never miss like do 2 days in a row. So if I miss a day, because I don't typically plan my rest days, I just go with how my body feels. And if like today is the day that I need rest, but then tomorrow, I'm not going to like not move my body, not exercise. Even if I still feel a little bit off, then I'm going to do a relaxation yoga or something like that, because I want to develop the habit of like someone who never misses 2 days in a row or whatever, right? Obviously things happen, you know, vacations and things like that, but as much as possible, we can make that happen, right?
Yeah, I think that's really important. And so when I tell people when they go to work with me, I'm like, you need to strength train at least 3 days a week. So that's the minimum. But I always tell people, you know, if you do five or six workouts, you're going to just develop a habit. And just like you were saying, it becomes a habit of something you need to do every day. So it becomes a lot easier to think like, oh, hey, when am I going to do my workout today? Because you know, you do it almost every day. And just like you, I set mine up the same as typically about 6 days a week. But I am usually working out every day. And if I need those easier days, it's a gentle walk, it's a gentle yoga. But it's that habit of I exercise almost every day.
Yeah, because then it's not so much a habit anymore. It's part of your identity, right? Mm-hmm. Like it makes sense if you read the Atomic Habit book, but then it becomes part of your identity. You're just the type of person who exercises / moves their body every single day.
Yeah,
I love that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about more specific exercises that can affect our metabolism. I guess both ways, like in the positive way and in the not so good way.
Yeah. So how I mentioned before, sometimes cardio can have that negative impact. And so it's going to be different for everybody. So that's not some blanket answer. You can sort of test it out and see what your body does. But there was a study where people did cardio, and the biggest chunk of those people who did cardio saw no difference in their weight. A small piece at top lost weight, and there's a small piece that actually gained weight. So I think it's so common, and especially, you know, doctors will be like, you need to exercise or do cardio, or we see cardio, and cardio can be good and you can do some of it, but really pay attention to how it affects you. So if you start doing cardio and you notice that you are super hungry after the next day, or you're having cravings, make sure you link that to the cardio, because some people experience that and they don't link it to the cardio. And then they're sort of stuck in that cycle, not realizing like what is going on here. So that is where I favor that strength training and that yoga that has strength to really exercise our body. And I also want to talk a little bit about the movement piece. So movement is just where you are moving. So think of more of a slow walk, you're getting groceries, it's sort of that 10,000 steps. So that can also be really helpful for your metabolism. So when we're just moving more, because our bodies are, we are burning calories, and we're burning in a way that doesn't stress our metabolism like the cardio does. So if you're just walking to the grocery store and cleaning your house, you're not going to be like super hungry because you haven't stressed yourself, but you have burnt more calories than if you're just sitting in a chair. So that movement piece can be a really great way, especially for a beginner to start. And, you know, if you are getting 2,000 steps a day, don't make your goal 10,000. Start with 3,000, 4,000, because your body, your feet, your joints aren't used to you doing that. So slowly build it up. I was talking to someone last week and she sort of went from that 2,000 up to 10 and she's experiencing pain. I'm like, you did way too much, way too fast. So start slow and listen to your body along the way. And then, so when it comes to your metabolism, you really want to get a lot of movement in and you want to exercise a little. So you don't want exercise to be the way for you to lose weight. You don't want to eat something and then think you can exercise it off. So exercise is to build that muscle. It is to feel good, to increase those endorphins. It's not so you can overindulge in something else. So it sort of creates that negative relationship with food. So sort of just keeping that separate, like I'm going to keep my body moving. I'm going to exercise a little. And then trying to obviously focus on that food and eating more whole food and just improving that diet slowly.
I like that. And I recently got a watch that counts my steps and I never really saw the value of it until I got it. And now it's like, it's really obvious to me how inactive I am or how active I am throughout the days, which is really interesting. But that's not so much the exercise part as what you were saying. It's more like the movement. So you're moving and you're exercising as well, which are kind of two different things, the way that you're playing them out. And I like what you said there about like, just watch, be observant of your body after you exercise, especially around cardio and even strength. So for me, I was someone who like early 20s, everyone was doing CrossFit and I started doing CrossFit. But I would be done the class and I would be depleted for the day, like completely depleted. And I would need to eat like every 30 minutes. I was a competitive swimmer when I was younger. And so when I was in my early 20s, again, I started swimming. And to me, it was like, well, it's not a good swimming session unless I'm swimming like at least 100 laps or like at least an hour kind of thing, right? But then I would come home and I would feel depleted. I would need to eat every 30 minutes to an hour. So then I started looking at things like eat right for your blood type. And I started looking at like my human design and things like that. And it all started to make sense to me that I was just physically not designed to be able to do those things, right? So I didn't do CrossFit because I really didn't love it, but I kept swimming. And instead of swimming an hour, I was like, well, what if I just swim 25 minutes, 30 minutes and then play with that? And I felt like good after, but I didn't feel depleted and I didn't have to eat every 30 minutes to an hour for the rest of the day. So that's a really interesting thing that you mentioned. I think, again, we've mentioned it twice now, but listening to your body, observing how you feel during, before, and hour, I guess after the exercise, it will give you so much insight on what is best for you. And it's not saying you don't need to go for a run or you don't need to swim or anything like that. But instead of trying 5K, it might just be 2K. And that's all that your body can really do to thrive. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I mean, there's so much information coming out with genetics too. You know, like some people can break down carbs and fat better and they're finding the genes linked to that. And I mean, I think it's probably going to be the same idea with muscle and recovery. But also we go in different seasons of our life. And as we age, that can change. And CrossFit can be really hard. Like they have made, I've seen the physical therapy continuing ed classes for CrossFit injuries, you know, because people are pushing themselves so hard and lifting super heavy and getting injuries. So yeah, exactly what we're saying is really listen to your body and find out what works for you and know that things aren't a blanket. There can be a generalization for things, but sort of be aware, am I inside that or am I falling outside that?
Yeah, and I don't think we're here to bash CrossFit because I do see many benefits to it. But I think, and there's some people that do it differently than others because my sister is really into CrossFit and she's a personal trainer as well. But like she is into the one where it's like, you know, yes, okay, I'm going to try to do as many reps as I can during this time, but I'm also going to do proper reps. I'm not going to like, you know, do things to injure myself versus there's some gyms where they like only focus on like, doesn't matter how your rep looks and you have to, you know, so yeah. There's good ways to do CrossFit and there's like not so good ways to do CrossFit like anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we talked about a bunch of different things here today. Can we talk about nutrition a little bit more? Like, are there certain foods that help us boost our metabolism and slow down our metabolisms that we should focus on?
Yeah, so going back to the basics, whole foods, like I think we all know it, but it's really hard because that is not the way our life is set up. That's not what is around us. We're busy. There's so much processed food. I mean, it's just changed so much. But when you focus more on whole foods, your hormones and your body are going to function better. So that can be really key for people who are experiencing different hormone problems. It may or may not solve it, but that is usually a big piece of it. And the other thing to think about with whole foods, your body absorbs less of those calories. So if you have 100 calories of an apple and you have 100 calories of a granola bar, your body is going to absorb more of those calories from the granola bar because it's going to be harder to process and break down that apple. So your body is going to be burning energy, breaking down these whole foods that haven't been broken down yet. And also foods like protein, your body is going to burn more calories breaking those down. It just takes the body more energy to do that. So, making sure you're getting enough protein in and knowing that these foods can affect you differently. So I always like people to focus, as I don't have people follow diets, we work on habit change. So depending on what the client wants to work on, we might start working on like adding protein with every meal or snack, and then working on adding those non-starchy veggies in because we all know those veggies are good, but it just like gets hard to add them in. Maybe we don't know how to have them. Maybe we need different ideas, but protein and non-starchy veggies can be a great way to start and change your diet without actually dieting. And like I had mentioned before, based on our genetics, different people are affected by carbs and fat. So some people's genetics are meant for more of a lower carb. They have a hard time breaking those down, but that's not everybody. So you can't just say you need to do that. And it's the same thing with fat. So focus on that protein, the non-starchy vegetables and, fruits and berries, and then sort of play with those carbs and fat if you're still not seeing results to see how they're affecting you.
That's really good advice. I mean, you can get real specific in those areas, and there's different ways to approach it, but I like the starting point here that you shared. What are your go-to proteins for clients that you recommend? Like, do you
Yeah.
recommend protein powders, or do you recommend people to stay away from that?
So obviously meats, eggs. I personally like collagen protein powder because it doesn't have anything else in it. I think the thing that gets tricky with protein powders is you really have to look at the ingredients. Sometimes they'll add a lot of stuff. So knowing if that's like a real food or if they're adding, sweeteners or preservatives or other things in it. So collagen protein powder, read the label because there's different brands, but that can be really simple. That's all that's in it. And I think they have like marine-based collagen protein powder. Fish is also another great source of protein. And things like peanuts or peanut butter, your nuts and your seeds, those are also high in fat, but they do have protein in them too.
I like that. For carbs, is there like better carbs or worse carbs? Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, so there is a difference in type of carbs, and this is probably where people get a little lost of carbs are bad, but there's really just different types of carbs. So there's, we can say complex carbs and simple carbs. So it sort of goes back to that idea, almost a processed food. You have that complex carb that's going to take your body longer to break down, and that simple carb. So a lot of times when we're thinking of breads or tortillas, they're already processed. And that carbohydrate is really broken down. You can also look at carbs in the sense of the glycemic index, so how it's affecting your blood sugar. But sort of going back to that idea of having that more complex carb is going to slow that blood sugar spike down. So going back to those whole foods, eating your apple, also eating berries tend to be lower in the glycemic index. And you can have some rice and quinoa. Like that's a grain we have a lot in our family. We make a big pot, but think about how much are you eating of that Are you putting like some non-starchy vegetables and protein with it? Because the effect on your blood sugar is going to matter that whole meal, which you're eating all together. So having that protein and fat in that meal, if you're having a carb, can help with that blood sugar regulation, which also plays into hormones. So especially if you're having hormone problems or PCOS, what you're eating can sort of affect all of that.
Yeah, I like that. I actually started like measuring the amount of carbs that I was consuming. Like it's easy to just scoop a bunch of rice or quinoa, even though it's, you know, a healthy grain or a healthier grain, whatever you want to call it. But it's so easy to just scoop a bunch on your plate without realizing how much you're consuming. So I've just, you know, I just have like one of those spoon measuring cup thingies. And I find it really helpful. And it's really the only thing I kind of measure. The rest, I just like the fats and the protein and whatever, I just eyeball it. But that one, I like to just scoop it, so I know exactly how much I'm doing and I'm not over eating carbs. I find it works for me anyways.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to do it. And sometimes with clients, we'll sort of do that too, like just measure out so you can really take that time to educate yourself.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily about dieting or restricting. It's about bringing awareness to what you're eating.
Yeah, because like I'll do that on my plate and then my partner doesn't. He'll just scoop up rice. I'm like, oh my God, you got like a cup and a half of rice. Like this is insanity. But I could see myself like having done that in the past. But it's just, yeah, I didn't want something like super complicated that I wasn't going to do. But I find just like having that one simple step I do and it works well for me. So yeah. Well, thank you. This was amazing. Is there one last thing that you wanted to share with our audience today before we go?
Yeah, so you guys can connect with me. And I also have a special discount code for all of your listeners. So you can use the code France20 and save 20% off of personal training for 3 months. And this goes back to exactly what we were talking about, that it takes time. So this coupon code I created so people can be successful and really create that sustainable habit change. So you can check out that code. You can also head to my website to check out my freebies or connect with me on social media.
Perfect. And I'll have all of your handles and links and everything in the show notes as well for anyone listening. And just so people can know a little bit, we were talking about this before we started recording, but you do all of your work online, right? So it doesn't matter where someone is. You have, I think, I don't know if you have the like over Zoom or anything like that, but you also work with an app so people can have easy access to your work. Can you just briefly explain that?
Yeah. So most of my clients I work with through my app. And in this app, it has these little video clips of me so I can create custom exercise programs for each person. And they can also get habit tracking and coaching. I check in with them. They can do meditations, full classes. So it's fully customized, but you don't have to meet with me live each day. So just like we were talking about, if you're exercising 3 to 6 times a week, I can create these workouts for you that you can do on your own time and you don't have to pay me $50 for each session. So the app really is nice. It's a great way for technology and for people to sort of save that money and time and still be able to help reach their goals.
Yeah. And I like that. Like obviously being a mom, saving money on that, on those things are great, but also it's like the time, you know, oh, well, I only have a 9 o'clock session today, but like 9 o'clock doesn't really work with you. Well, you can fit in those exercise sessions when it works for you and you have guidance and motivation and tracking and all the other benefits as well. So I love that. Thank you so much, Michelle, for your wisdom today. And I'm sure the listeners got a lot out of it as I did as well.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
If you desire guidance from me every week, make sure to subscribe to this podcast and also follow me on Instagram or TikTok. I want to leave you with this quote. Great parenting happens when you start controlling yourself and stop controlling your child. Parenting is more about reparenting yourself as it is about parenting your child. This is a process. This is a journey, and I am here to guide you one connection at a time.